Isn't Ryan positive? How could you not hear Ryan Burrow and just have a big smile on your face? He's just so positive.
We always do.
Very positive.
I'm excited about going to Pitchfork, but I have a confession to make.
Which is what?
My son Michael loves Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
Michael's 17
Don't
years
you?
Old.
Don't you love Brian
I
Wilson?
I do. But Michael's all crazy because it's like, oh, Brian Wilson is coming to do the whole Pet Sounds album. He's going to do it in its entirety.
Yeah.
And I said, that's great. I'm taking you with. And he's like, really? I have to go with my mom?
Right.
But then he thought, you know what? If she's taking me to see Brian Wilson, I can go. That's yeah. cool. But I need to know, I've never been to Pitchfork, so Greg Kot is on the line with us right now. Rock critic, music journalist, what do you want to be called these days, Greg? Author.
Hanger on. Right, that'll all work, you know.
Oh.
The uncoolest person in the crowd. That's
well, then so, how are you going to help me not be the uncoolest person in the crowd? Because I think, you know, my son is like, I'm going with you. What do I need to know so I look like I'm getting it all on at Pitchfork?
Well, you're cool just because you're going. I mean, it's. I think Pitchfork is... The festival for the music connoisseurs in Chicago. Lollapalooza is kind of the, you know, day in the park kind of crowd. The serious music fans go to Pitchfork, I think. And so from that standpoint, you're already cool, Wendy. And
right,
then so your son should be admiring you for that reason alone.
He should be.
And it's a great lineup. It really is a good lineup. You know, the only thing that could screw it up is the weather gets crappy. But in terms of the musical value, it's more bang for the buck than any festival in Chicago, I think.
I am so unhip because I'm looking at your article, Kot's Picks, 19 Bands Not to Miss at Pitchfork and all the rest. And, I mean, I'm like, Twin Peaks, oh, great, they're doing a little screening for the new Twin
sure.
Peaks movie or series that's coming out. I'm very unhip.
No, well, this will give you a quick education. Let's put it that way. You'll see some of the bands that people do think are cool and are up and coming. Twin Peaks, for example, a really good Chicago band. A bunch of young guys started the band when they were just right in high school, and now they're in their early 20s. They're on their third record. Really good band. One of the best bands out of Chicago in recent years. But there's a lot of really good Chicago acts. I mean, this hip-hop act, Mick Jenkins, that's performing right after Twin Peaks, is also getting a lot of accolades. Chicago's hip-hop scene is probably one of the hottest in America right now, led by Chance the Rapper, and that guy named Kanye West was out of here a few years ago as well. So... a lot of attention being paid to the Chicago hip-hop scene. So you can say, Wendy, that I saw Mick Jenkins, who is the next rising star out of the Chicago hip-hop.
Greg, I'm looking at the diversity in this list, and it really is pretty vast. As you mentioned, there's quite a bit of hip-hop, but you also get Carly Rae Jepsen, and you also get Brian Wilson. That's quite a range.
Yeah, it is. Carly Rae is probably, you know, that the Canadian singer-songwriter. She's probably one of the most pop-leaning performers they've ever had at the festival. I mean, she's sold 20 million records since 2008. So it's interesting that they would book something like that. Usually they're a little bit more, you know, cutting-edge, avant-garde, but here they have a kind of a mainstream act. But she has gotten a lot of love for her songwriting chops. And Brian Wilson... Every year, Pitchfork tries to book at least one kind of heritage act
yeah.
that has had a great deal of influence on young musicians today. And Pet Sounds, 50 years later, still resonates as one of those albums that sort of, you know, created a path for young musicians to go after. And, you know, mainly because Brian essentially created that work on his own. He didn't really use the other Beach Boys on it except to sing the background harmonies,
mm-hmm.
but... It was basically his baby. I mean, he produced it, he wrote it, he arranged it, he did everything. And that was unusual when he did it in 1966. You didn't usually, a single artist usually didn't have that much control over their work, and Brian Wilson sort of usurped it. And ever since, artists have been saying, well, we can do that too, and been using Pet Sounds as a great deal of inspiration.
So this is a huge deal. He's going to go through the whole album of Pet Sounds. Am I correct in assuming this?
Yeah, he actually did this before, and I've seen him do it. The band he has is excellent. None of the Beach Boys themselves are on it on this tour. There may be one or two of the ancillary players that were in the Beach Boys back in the day, but it's mostly newer guys who are like acolytes of Brian Wilson, and they do a tremendous job of bringing this album to life. It had not been performed live when the Beach Boys were in their heyday, because the rest of the Beach Boys hated it. They didn't like it, particularly Mike Love just refused to perform many of these songs because he didn't see it as kind of in the Beach Boys tradition, which it wasn't. It was more melancholy, more orchestral. Some of the lyrics didn't make sense to Mike Love. But Brian always thought of it as his greatest work, and now it's finally getting the treatment that it deserves. The one thing about Brian is he's almost a – Brian's really not a performer anymore. In fact, he kind of looks like he's a deer in the headlights when he gets up there now when he performs. But it's about this music, and it's about this music that this guy created 50 years ago that still sounds beautiful. So from that standpoint, it's kind of a moving experience. I do recommend seeing it. But it may be a little strange seeing Brian up there on stage.
Is it going to make me sad?
Oh, I hope not. Will it make Wendy sad?
It made me a little sad when I saw it 10 years ago. Brian's, I think his travails with drugs and mental illness have been well documented, yeah. And he's sort of come out on the other side very much alive. But you kind of wonder what he's thinking when he's, listening to these songs. There's almost a wistfulness about it. Melancholy, which kind of fits with the music, but Brian's not really a performer anymore. He's not really a great singer anymore. He's kind of more of an observer, watching his greatest work being performed.
We're talking to Greg Kot, one of our favorite rock and roll writers of all time. You've had a chance to sit down with him at some point, I'm guessing, haven't you, Greg?
Yes, I've talked to Brian several times.
And where is he during those conversations? Is he there or is he elsewhere?
Well, let me tell you, he actually spent some time living in St. Charles in the 90s,
yeah.
And I spent a whole day at his house watching him work and just hanging around. And there were two or three times where I would be sitting with Brian and he would fall asleep. And, then he would wake up like nothing happened. And there would be times I would ask him, when I started asking him very direct questions, what do you feel like when you wake up in the morning? You know, if you ask him, like, what is the meaning of Pet Sounds, he'll look at you like, well, I meant it to create a work of love, but he doesn't get very profound. But when you ask him real direct questions about his life, and he would give you these really poignant kind of answers, like, I don't really know where I am. He says, it takes me hours to orient myself each day. I feel scared when I get up in the morning. You know, those kind of things. That's the stuff that really lingers after those conversations. They've created a stable life for him. You know, his wife has done a great job of sort of building some stability into his life and allowing him to get some accolades here late in his career. But at the same time, you kind of wonder, Brian seems to be almost like a participant in his life, but not an active part of it,
Didn't his doctor convince him to let him produce or co-produce some of his songs for a while?
Oh, yeah, Eugene Landy. He was like a notable tyrant, one of the bad guys in the music industry, and, kind of manipulated Brian for much of the 80s and into the 90s. And then Brian sort of got his life back when he was able to escape the clutches of this guy. But it was a very negative relationship in his life and a parasitic relationship, really, and didn't really do him much good. So there was about 20 years there where Brian was pretty checked out.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's still around is amazing to me.
Well, I'm looking so forward to seeing him. I know my 17-year-old son, Michael, really looks up to his songwriting and cannot wait to see him on Saturday night, 7:25. And then Sufjan Stevens, which I'm probably saying wrong, am I?
No, you've got it. That's correct.
Sufjan Stevens. He's at 8:30 on Saturday night. That's one of your picks as well.
Well, he made a great record last year, this Carrie and Lowell record, which was, we're talking about some sad topics here. He was talking, this record was all about his mother's mental decline and death, and it's a very sad record. And to me, it'll be fascinating to see how he performs this work in such a large setting. I mean, people are, at a festival, you normally want to go out with a kind of an upbeat feeling, and I'm not sure Sufjan is the guy to do it. But again, it speaks to the fact that Pitchfork is not your typical music festival. It is an alternative kind of music festival, and again, it's for the music connoisseur. I think for people looking to like have a great time and throwing the beach balls around during the music, Pitchfork and Sufjan Stevens are not the ticket for that.
Should I bring my therapist with me on Saturday, Greg?
You might. need a little work on Sunday morning after seeing Brian Wilson and, you know, Sufjan.
Didn't Lana Del Rey tell Sufjan Stevens to cheer up just a little bit, Greg, at some point?
Oh, that would make the trifecta, right? That would be the trifecta of
sure.
You know, so...
And so Sound Opinions is still going on. Didn't that originate at the Loop radio station?
I did a version of that show in the early 90s, and Jim did another version of that show, and then we sort of joined forces.
Oh, that's right.
99, we did it on another commercial rock station, and then we moved over to public radio in 2005, which is where we've been ever since. We're syndicated on like 130-140 stations now around the country.
Congratulations. So, great.
That's awesome. And, of course, you and Jim DeRogatis are doctors, the rock doctors. So musical allergy or addiction or a friend or relative who needs an intervention, how do people find you and Dr. Jim DeRogatis?
Well, we're available on the website for a consultation. there's a small fee available.
Sure.
No, there's no fee involved. I'm just kidding. But we're always glad to help. And we actually do a segment every quarter on the show where we talk to a patient who needs some musical intervention. Like, you know, my wife and I don't agree on music, and you give us some, you know, mutual music that we can all, you know, we can play while we're eating dinner, you know, without throwing plates at each other. So we'll get those kind of questions. And it's always fun. It's just a fun way to include the listeners in the show.
All right. Well, I hope I don't stand out like a sore thumb at Pitchfork.
Don't worry.
And if you guys are going, go to ChicagoTribune.com and look for Kott's Picks, 19 bands not to miss at Pitchfork, and all the rest. He's Greg Kott. Thank you so much for talking me through this, and maybe I'll run into you there.
Sounds good, Wendy. Thank you very much.
Bye, Greg. Have a great week.
Thanks, Bill.
Take
Bye.
Care. All right, a quick break, and then more show. Do you feel better, by the way?
I do.
A little more informed?
I'm a good mom.
I think you are.